Hi there. Welcome to Did I Talk Too Much, a Grit podcast. Well, hello. Welcome back to Grit's podcast titled Did I Talk Too Much? I'm going to be your host for today. My name is Audrey Morrison. And today with me, I have a lovely guest, Dr. Lisa Egram.
Hello. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being here with me. We're so excited to talk about our topic today. We're going to be covering women in higher education. Mm-hmm. We thought it was important because technically we're both women in higher education.
Absolutely. We are.
And we know a lot of our listeners are also within this university sphere too. So we wanted to talk about the unique challenges and triumphs of being a woman in this sphere and wanted to hopefully encourage you guys by this conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to be here today. Thank you for asking me.
So, Lisa, I just wanted to ask you kind of some basic things. I wanted to know, like, what are your degrees? Mm-hmm. What are they in and where are they from?
Absolutely. Okay, so you need to know that I don't know if you're familiar with the Strengths Quest, mm-hmm. but in my top five strengths are both learner and intellection. Mm-hmm. So don't be surprised at the degrees that I have. I've been in higher education since I went to college in the last century.
Wow.
So my bachelor's degree is from Grove City College in Western Pennsylvania, and I double majored in English literature and Christian thought and was one class shy of a philosophy minor.
Oh, wow.
And I knew that I loved learning and being in school. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure what to do next, honestly. I had no idea what I wanted to do when I graduated. Mm-hmm. And so one summer in school, I had the opportunity to teach English in southern Thailand for a summer and realized that I loved teaching.
Yeah.
So when I got back my senior year, I saw a sign in our English department office that said I could get a free master's degree in TESOL, teaching English to speakers of other languages.
Wow.
If I also spent 2 years with a Christian organization teaching English in China. Mm. So I did that. I got my MA in TESOL while teaching at a university in China, which mm-hmm. was a fantastic experience. Mm-hmm. Then I came back and I'm going to do a little bit of a career journey along the way.
Yeah. Like,
because all along the way, I just haven't really known what the goal was.
Right.
And then when I did kind of figure out, I think what I want to do, it just took a long time to get there. Mm-hmm. But all along the way, I've been in higher education. So I came back from China and I got a job working in a global student office at a small university called Hope International University here mm-hmm. in Fullerton, mm-hmm. where I was doing some teaching. I was doing immigration advising. I was hiring some teachers for our ESL and EFL programs. I was kind of developing a study abroad program where mm-hmm. we had students from Korea or Japan come to Hope mm-hmm. As a study abroad experience. Mm-hmm. And I realized I got a lot of experiences in that, even though I wasn't always teaching. Mm-hmm. When I was teaching, I realized I don't like teaching language. Okay. Because in teaching languages, you're kind of having to help students learn by repetition, by rote.
Yeah.
So I got a little bored. Some people love that. Mm-hmm. The classes I loved teaching were about culture mm-hmm. and understanding cultural differences to help our global students adapt mm-hmm. to what it's like in life in the United States. So I realized I love teaching, but not English.
Right.
And I had also thought, you know, I'd love to maybe get a seminary degree and learn more about theology. Maybe I can teach more ideas in my future because I felt like teaching mm-hmm. would be part of things. So after a few years, I decided to get my MDiv, my Master of Divinity here at Talbot, specifically at our Institute for Spiritual Formation.
Okay.
Yeah. So but you know what? I needed to keep working to support myself while mm-hmm. I went to school. So I found a job here at Biola working in the Career Center mm-hmm. as an office manager. And I was getting my MDiv in spiritual formation part-time. And the Lord provided financially for that, which was kind of miraculous.
Yeah.
And it was such a good program for me. Mm-hmm. So after, I think it took me 5 or 6 years to work part-time through that program.
Yeah.
And honestly, as the office manager in the Career Center, it was a great experience. And I started to get bored after a while. Mm-hmm. So I had two things in mind. First of all, I'm really bored. Second of all, where is this degree leading me? Mm-hmm. If I want to continue teaching, I think it would be really fun to teach theology to college students. Well, to do that, I'm going to have to get either what's called a THM or a PhD in mm-hmm. some kind of divinity related field.
Yeah.
So I started looking into that, but I was also bored in my job. So I applied for a position that came up in the spiritual development area. Mm-hmm. And I was hired as an associate dean when Todd Pickett was here. And so I worked as an associate dean there with that mm-hmm. team for 5 or 6 years. When I finished my MDiv, I applied for a program at the University of Aberdeen, a PhD program.
Yeah.
That was a part-time distance program, mm-hmm. which allowed me to keep my job. And also, to be honest, I was tired of sitting in classes. It was entirely a research degree mm-hmm. in New Testament studies. So I continued working full-time and doing my PhD part-time in New Testament studies. And along the way in the full-time role, opportunities came up to start our area of student wellness, which I was able to bring a lot of integrative and collaborative thinking to because mm-hmm. of my theology degree that I was earning. And then I also became the interim vice president of student development for about 13 months mm-hmm. while Dr. Corey was looking for a permanent vice president.
Yeah.
And all along the way, discerning, okay, my trajectory is to teach. I think I'd really like teaching. I was mm-hmm. able to be an adjunct and teach BBST 103, Bib and Terp, for incoming students. I loved that. Mm-hmm. But I keep getting these experiences in leadership and higher education, and people keep asking me to take on more responsibilities. So what do mm-hmm. I do? And at a certain point, it became clear, well, I am good at these leadership roles. Mm-hmm. I really love the teaching part. And mm-hmm. the higher you go up in leadership and higher education, the less connected you are to students.
Right.
And I wanted to stay connected to students. So then an opportunity as I finished my PhD last December.
Congrats. And
thank you. Yeah. And about a year ago, was asked to consider the possibility of teaching for Rosemead School of Psychology and mm-hmm. specifically teaching theology classes that would help spiritually form and help bring integration ideas to our doctoral students in psychology. So I was able to teach one class there, and it was such a great learning experience for me. Mm-hmm. I ended up applying for that role. And so then this January, I started teaching at Rosemead mm-hmm. and doing a little bit of administrative work for student development and student wellness. So I have a lot of degrees and experience along the way, and a lot of experience in higher education.
Yeah. You do a lot of things at Viola.
Yeah. It's been a really fun journey.
As well as being our club sponsor.
I am. I'm the advisor for GRID.
Yes. It's wonderful.
Yes.
Well, that it was just lovely to hear the whole story. I had known kind of some things mm-hmm. about what you do here, but it was great to hear like the
whole trajectory.
Yes, the whole trajectory.
And I want to say, I want to emphasize, because I know that in college, and this was me too, a lot of people ask, what do you want to do when you graduate? And most of us don't know. And I didn't know either. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I graduated college in 2002, and now I am in 2024. I was on a trajectory to something, and I wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. And every step that came up was just kind of the next right thing with a lot of prayer and discernment and talking to people along mm-hmm. the way. And now I feel like, oh, this is a good place to be. This is, mm-hmm. I've loved things along the way, but I feel like I'm only 20 years after college in a place where this is kind of what I've been working for.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a lot of fun.
Wait, that's wonderful. Yeah. So you will get there, listeners.
You will. It might take 20 years, but enjoy the journey.
Yes. I'm sure you and I got the same thing because I'm an English literature major. And so it's the dreaded question.
You can do anything with your English major. It is a dreaded
what
question.
What are you going to do?
I don't know.
I don't know. I just like to read.
Yeah, totally.
It was so funny because last week was missions conference and I went to the missionary fair. And it was one of the first times I've ever like talked to so many people who, when I say I am an English major, they say, we love English majors.
Yes. Because English majors can think and they can communicate and they can write. And those skills are invaluable.
So that was quite heartwarming and very encouraging, as well as your story is super encouraging, too.
Thank you.
Well, I wanted to dive a little bit deeper into kind of just the world of higher education. And for our listeners, we're just defining higher education as like any educational institution beyond high school. Yeah. So especially because we're here at Biola, we're talking kind of more about like university context, not necessarily like trade school or something like that. So yeah, I wanted us to also give kind of a historic background about women in higher education. Women have been educated for like a decent amount of time, especially if you were wealthy, but a lot of the time it was within the home and within kind of a more private tutor setting, which can be helpful for some people, but it's there's something about kind of the institution itself of like a university where ideas are kind of flowing and being, I don't know, being exchanged and interchanged. That's really special.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think having learning and intellection as my strengths, and that has been an enlivening part of my career that I've gotten to be in higher ed and go to different guest lectures of folks that come to campus. And there are often kind of on this side of things, lunches that are provided for faculty or staff with guest lectures. And those are just so fun to be able to think about and see.
Exactly.
I'm sure in Tori too, you love that kind of conversation.
Yes. In Tori, like at this point, like, I hate reading anything without being able to talk about it with people. Like, I don't like the feeling of just reading something and not, and learning something, especially something that's really exciting, and not being able to tell anyone about it.
Yeah.
So even in some of my, like, major classes that were more lecture-based, like, I would come home and I would tell my roommate.
Yeah.
Like, I learned this, and I learned this, and this. And it's really special. And, something that I think women have been kind of barred from a long time. And so, yeah, so women were often educated in the home. In America, at least, more women's colleges started opening up around the 19th century.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until, like, kind of the 50s that some of our, Ivy League universities started becoming co-ed, which is kind of crazy. Like,
That is within the lifetime of my grandma.
Yes.
Which is wild.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or even thinking about my great-grandmother, like, that would have been weird for her to go get a degree.
That's right.
Which is so interesting. There's been such a huge cultural shift.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I also wanted to highlight a couple famous women in higher education.
Yeah. Who do you have?
Elizabeth Blackwell.
Yes.
So she was the first woman in America to graduate from medical school. And that was in 1849. So she applied to, I think, 25 different universities, university med schools. And she got accepted to one as a prank.
Oh, my goodness.
As a prank. And then she ended up graduating top of her class.
Of course.
So.
Of course.
And she did really good work, if I'm remembering correctly, in, like, inner city New York.
That's amazing.
And there's another woman named Mary Jane Patterson. Yeah. She was the first black woman in America to get a college degree.
It's fantastic.
From Oberlin College in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And she was formerly enslaved.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And it looks like, I think if I'm remembering correctly, she graduated in 1862.
Yes.
So that is glass ceiling, like, breaking in major ways.
Yes. During the Civil War.
During the Civil War. It's fantastic.
So we just wanted to honor those women who came before us.
The grit and resilience.
Seriously. Mm-hmm. Who, like, pioneered the way for us.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You have anything to add on that?
No, it's so cool.
Yeah. So I guess, we already talked about this first one. Well, I can ask, like, okay, when you were younger, did you dream of getting all these degrees and working in a university?
That's a good question. I had no idea I would end up in higher education.
Mm-hmm.
I think my earliest dream when I was young was, I want to be a archaeologist.
Oh, cool.
Or, you know, I probably Indiana Jones had come out, and I don't know. Maybe there was something about the Ark, like people finding part of the Ark, that I grew up in a Christian home, like school context. And so that probably enlivened my imagination for the Bible being true.
Yeah.
But I had no idea what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I would say that was probably true until my late 20s when I did decide to enroll in ISF. It was to, in part, discern if faculty would be in my future.
Yeah.
And, you know, even in getting my PhD again, it was like a 6.5-year journey. And along the way, being invited into leadership positions in higher ed administration, it was kind of open-handed in my journey through my PhD process was kind of open-handed because I knew that I was learning and being transformed in my own way and watching Christian higher education, like, really in the financial world, kind of on the decline.
Yeah.
And thinking, I don't know that I'm ever going to find a faculty position just because Christian schools are not, they tend to be shrinking. Our population is declining. And so it really is a gift that I've ended up here. Even in this 2/3 faculty position, it's such a gift.
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't know. It was really saying yes to the next opportunity that came with prayer and discernment along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, encouragement in that. If you don't know what's next, it's okay. Just keep learning what you like.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That I needed to hear that today.
Yeah.
So thanks.
You got it.
I wanted to ask if there were any particular challenges you faced being a woman in the world of higher education.
Sure.
Or you, or like even your other female colleagues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think there are particular challenges, and they come in a variety of flavors. And often they come in a variety of flavors depending on the kind of institution you're in. So I'll speak from my own experience at a faith-based college that firmly believes that what the scripture says is true.
Mm-hmm.
Really for the majority of my career in higher ed. And then my experience kind of in higher ed leadership as well as in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was hired in to become the Associate Dean of Spiritual Development, asking my boss, like, I know in our context, there are mixed understandings of the role of women in ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me your thoughts on this so that I can know where it's best for me to fit in mm-hmm. this kind of space. And so I've learned, even in that, in our context here at Biola, especially this would have been 10 or 12 years ago.
Right.
Like if I speak in chapel, I'm going to absolutely reference a male theologian that will be known by the community because most of the people in the room don't know me. And in order to garner trust, for some of our audience, I'm going to definitely appeal to male authorities, because that's important for them to listen to what I have to say.
Yeah.
I've had conversations with female peers about how we dress and make it, like, there are times where I'll make sure I wear heels. I'm on the short side and I have a softer voice. And so there are times where I have to be attentive to how I'm dressing.
Yeah.
To being a little bit taller, when and how I'm going to use my voice, even modulating it in certain conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is, I think, for some women, a certain cognitive load that comes with attending to, you know, the meetings that are happening that day, how I need to show up in a certain space. There are certain spaces where I can be just more my empathetic self, and there are certain spaces where I need to be very brain forward, rational, logic forward in the way I'm talking and thinking. And honestly, I think to be successful in leadership, you do have to adapt to your context, but I think women need to adapt, need to be more attentive to that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of learning along the way. And at the end of some days, I've been very exhausted, depending on the kinds of meetings that I've had and where I've had to adapt a little more in some spaces. I think for myself, too, as a woman in higher ed leadership and in any leadership position, I have often considered, I have empathy, and that would be in my top strengths as well.
Right.
I can walk into a room and feel what's going on. And if I sense that someone is on the edge of tears, man, I'm right there with them.
Yeah.
And sometimes I have to, like, almost in my imagination, place that emotion back on the person to keep control of myself. And I have considered that to be a weakness in the past, especially in leadership settings.
Mm-hmm.
But in more recent years, I've come to perceive that as a significant strength. Because when we are in times of having to make really hard decisions at the leadership level.
Yeah.
Some have viewed empathy as a weakness because you can't make hard decisions, quote unquote, but I firmly disagree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think I can make those hard decisions. And when I'm making them and communicating them, I can be hyper aware of how people are receiving them.
Yeah.
And how to care for people along the way who will be adversely impacted by those hard decisions.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of ability to bring people along, to understand where they're at, to know where I'm at, because of that kind of interpersonal skill, ends up fostering trust, even when I'm having to let someone go, or continuing to foster a team building relational kind of sense of way of being, even when we are making really hard decisions and everything feels very disruptive and disrupted.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that empathy is perceived by many people in higher leadership positions to be valuable, but I think actually what's also true is research is bearing it out.
Yeah.
That having a certain level of emotional intelligence, and for me that is empathy, is a mark of a good leader.
Yeah. Well, you had said something before, like you walk into a room and you can kind of
feel gauge, what's going on.
Yeah. Feel what's going on. And I think that's so valuable mm-hmm. for being able to care for the people who are under you.
Yeah.
Well, and I think like if we shift our view of leadership, not to be like, I'm in charge, I'm making decisions.
Exactly.
If we're thinking about servant leadership,
yes,
which is probably the leadership that is should be modeled at this institution, then empathy is so valuable because if you're able to like understand where someone's at, you can better serve them.
That's right.
And I'm glad that you've been able to exercise that strength.
Yeah, find it as a superpower rather than a deficit.
It is.
Yeah.
It is a superpower. The grit team really benefits from your empathy.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for sharing.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I also, one of the things I wanted to go into, which I guess kind of intersects with how empathy really strengthens our leadership and our institutions, is like, in what ways has more female presence in higher education really impacted it for the better? And I guess you can speak from your own experience at Biola.
Yeah, and I want to be careful to say things that, like, to offer descriptions that might feel gendered.
Right.
And at the same time, often women tend to be more collaborative, maybe more empathetic, and even have a more systems, like a broad perspective of how different parts of the institution impact each other than some men. And again, I want to be very careful. These are generalizations who do have a, like, who might be single-minded for their particular area and have a presence that is maybe more thinking or logic, or not that, I actually think I have a lot of logic and I use a lot of data in my decision making, but it's paired with empathy. So maybe it's a more directive way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think higher ed benefits from the collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Like a team building, it might be like any, whatever idea is the best is the idea that wins. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who it came from.
Mm-hmm.
And so fostering a space where ideas can be shared. Now, the decision might have to end up with a leader if that happens to be me, but the best idea wins. And so I think, collaboration, teamwork, a sense of caring for employees along the way, even in the midst of hard decisions, has been really important in the last few years for us.
Right.
And I think it's really beneficial in challenging times because women can make hard decisions and be caring along the way, maybe in ways that some men have to work a little harder for.
Yeah.
And then I think women in the room of the decision making can look to kind of the systemic, this department, that department, not just mine, is going to be impacted. Mm-hmm. So how do we do this more? And again, I don't want to say men do this and women do that.
Right.
But there tends to be more of that brought to the table.
Yeah.
These kinds of things brought to the table. I personally think, and this is my bent, that collaborative leadership is the best way of being.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody would agree with me, but I think, gosh, there's just so much power in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for not making too many generalizations.
Yeah.
I think that is really helpful. Yeah. I think it really models the kind of even like collaboration between men and women that are supposed to happen.
Yes. The interdependence.
Yes.
That scripture talks about.
Yeah. And like not just having a men's college and a women's college or even certain things like, I don't know if like sometimes majors have different kind of gender,
like stereotypes or gender breakdowns.
So gender breakdowns. And so, even like, no, like we benefit in all areas if we are interdependent.
That's right.
Like it's not fun to just have like Talbot is all men
or
something like that. Like that's not how, our university is going to thrive.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
So thanks for illuminating that for me.
Yeah.
So one way the tables have like really turned kind of in the past 10 or so years, especially like after COVID, is that actually like in general, more women are going to college now than men.
Yeah,
which is so interesting. Even in things like law school or med school.
Yeah.
way more women are applying and graduating from those programs, which is just fascinating. I think Biola is about 63 to 65%
women.
Yeah.
At the undergrad level.
Right.
At the grad level, I think it's still more even or male dominant because of our seminary.
Yes. Yeah. So that's really interesting. It's kind of been a quick shift. It feels like, okay, 100 years ago, not many of us were really going to college.
In fact, we were probably told you shouldn't.
Yes, exactly. And now, a lot more women are going to college, and I'm kind of going off of that idea of like interdependence.
Yeah,
I wonder like, what does that mean for kind of the future of higher education if it's going to be now like maybe dominated by women?
That's so interesting because it makes me want to ask, where are the men?
Yeah.
And what have been the barriers recently for male enrollment, especially at the undergrad level, it sounds like. But you were even mentioning medical school and law school.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. I wonder if there's a generation, I'm totally guessing. I'm sure there's research studies on this, but here's some theories, some ideas. With the opening of higher education and grad programs to women, I wonder if upper generations are encouraging younger generations to take advantage of things they didn't have access to or opportunity or encouragement towards. So I wonder if there's something there for women.
Yeah.
And it just seems like less of a question for certain populations. Like that is what you're going to do.
Right.
And I know that's not true for every subpopulation, but, and then I wonder about, I don't know. I think there's also trends of delayed marriage potentially on average. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if there's more of a thought that I'm not sure when I'm going to get married and I need to be able to support myself. Mm-hmm. So here's something that I'll move toward. And then I think that this is true. I might be speaking out. This is outside of my expertise, but I do think women mature more quickly than men in adolescence. Mm-hmm. And so maybe there's just a faster decision toward what could be a possible future among the women of our country than the men.
Yeah. Another thing that I thought of was the kind of more recent turn against college, the traditional college.
Oh, tell me more about that.
I feel like it's a pretty popular cultural sentiment now, especially in middle America.
Yeah.
About because college is like the prices just keep climbing.
Yep.
How you can make just as much money with doing
vocational
a trade
training. Yeah.
Or vocational training than you would if you went to a traditional 4-year institution. And like student loans have been
a
big topic of discussion. And like, you know, it's possible that like, you know, someone like me, I might graduate with an English degree and work in a coffee shop for like 5 years, paying off student loans. So, I think there's kind of a cultural push against college that I've seen.
I don't know that that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
But I can also see that some trade schools, like if we're thinking about carpentry or plumbing you know, those are more male dominated and kind of industries. And goodness, if you have a smarts with your hands in ways that I don't, hallelujah, more power to you. I have a leaky faucet. I need help with it. You know?
Yeah. I think they're just generally more vocational trainings that are like kind of marketed towards men. I think the only like big vocational thing that I'm thinking about for that is like woman dominated is cosmetology.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm missing something.
There might be more.
But So those are just some musings. I am like interested to see how things play out.
Yes.
And hopefully that this means like, you know, more women are going to college, you know, further down the road, we'll have more gender equality when it comes to faculty.
Yeah.
Because still, like, even though Biola is 65% women in undergrad, we don't necessarily see that in faculty.
Yeah, it's not represented in the same way at faculty.
Yeah. But another thing I wanted to say about that is that I don't know what it is, but seeing like women faculty members mean so much to me.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And like as a woman, I think like that representation really, really matters to me.
I think you're right.
Seeing, getting to know and learn from women who are really pursuing the life of the mind and also at this faith-based institution, like love the Lord.
Yeah.
Has just been incredibly encouraging. That's and I feel cool. like I have so many more role models.
Yeah.
Just upon coming here my first year.
It's been said that you can be what you can see, mm-hmm. or negatively, you can't be what you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
So what a gift that is to be able to see women in positions that you might want to hold.
Yeah. Yeah. So shout out to the Tory women faculty.
Yeah.
I love them with my whole heart.
It's awesome.
And I want to be like all of them when you grow up. Plus Lisa. Well, to wrap up our episode, I wanted to ask you one final question.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, what advice do you have for younger women pursuing higher education?
Yeah, for sure. If you love learning, reading, thinking, do it.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest question I had in thinking about a PhD program or higher education was what to do it in.
Yeah.
And for me, it took other life experience to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be afraid to find a job that ultimately will help you teach you more about who you are, what you like,
mm-hmm.
what you want to learn about. Pursue being in spaces that have topics of interest for you. So
yeah.
I'm thinking as an English major, I mean, find a job at a magazine or some kind of communication space.
Mm-hmm.
And you will feel like you don't belong. You might feel like, and I still feel this way, there's a kind of a dynamic called imposter syndrome,
mm-hmm.
of everybody else knows more than me. Surely I shouldn't have been hired into this space.
Yes.
Everybody thinks that way.
Yeah.
So just talk about it with people that you trust and mm-hmm. get encouragement from them.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy, if you're going to be in higher education, you need to enjoy learning. And so I would say enjoy the degrees that you're getting along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to rush to the finish. Honestly, I think for most people, my recommendation is if you're going to do more higher education, do it part-time and learn along the way and work along the way,
mm-hmm.
because then you have an opportunity to put into practice the things that you're learning and thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that is invaluable.
That way it's not just school for
exactly.
like 10 years straight.
Yeah. Because there are skills in the workplace, no matter what the job is, even if it's a barista,
mm-hmm.
that will serve you well. In higher education,
mm-hmm.
whether you're in a faculty position, staff position, or administrative role.
Mm-hmm.
Because higher education involves working with people. Mm-hmm. And so the more that you can learn to work well with people, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry if you don't know what you're going to do yet. It's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep getting experiences along the way and
mm-hmm.
be open. Work hard.
Mm-hmm.
Keep looking. Explore. Apply to things. But know that it's okay if you don't. You're not going to land your passion job right away.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much, Lisa,
for
your wise advice and for sharing your story with us. We really appreciate it. We love you here at Grit.
Yeah, thank you.
Best.
I love you guys too.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed that interview with Dr. Lisa Agrum. She's wonderful. I hope you adore her as much as we do. Well, with that, we're going to wrap up and say bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Did I Talk Too Much? If you enjoyed this week's episode, we would love to hear from you. You can leave a rating and a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening from. To make sure you don't miss an episode every other week, be sure to subscribe. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram as well to get the latest updates on upcoming events, new blogs, and question boxes where you have the chance to have your questions answered on the podcast. Our Instagram is @grit@biola. Our blog is linked in our Instagram bio where you can hear from our staff writers and read more about our mission. Thanks again for tuning in. The views expressed in this podcast may not necessarily represent the beliefs of Biola University or the Grit editorial board. All content is designed to inspire and challenge Grit listeners to explore their gifting, foster resilience, gain insight, and develop tenacity.